My name is Aka Kande Lokandepwe, and welcome to the Diary on One podcast. I am your host. Yeah, I don't know. I forgot how I do it. It's the first time I have forgotten my intro. But guys,
this hi. Happens to me all the time. Yeah, it's quite life.
Guys,
worst things have happened.
I'm so happy. Oh yeah, but I didn't do the also known as Aka, but you guys get it at this point. Today's guest is special in a weird way. It's something I've been
very looking forward to.
In a very weird way. Not weird in a bad way, but like every guest is special because I don't know how I handpick all of you. But I'm always very random with my guests, and this is very different from what we've been talking about on the podcast. I hope you realize that I have just gone in a different realm and randomly texted somebody, loved her stuff on Instagram, and reached out and said, hey, I have a podcast, do you want to join? And she said, sure.
She said, yes. Balloons, flowers, confetti.
And when you think about it, I always like having something to look forward to. And because I've been recording so much lately, I'm glad I had like this one episode that was scheduled for weeks and I was looking forward to it because of personal reasons, to be honest. She does amazing work, and before I spoil it for everybody, today's guest is Tisa. Hi, Tisa.
Hi, Aka. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What's good?
What's good is having you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here as well.
And I'm so curious, like, how does it feel to be a filmmaker? I never thought I'd ever have an opportunity to have a filmmaker or director or producer on my podcast. That's how random this is for me, and that's how much I've been looking forward to just having somebody in your industry.
Yeah, I hear you. I would say that the one thing I would say is that hearing your stories resonate with people, such as like my film, Bride of Zambia, when people like you reach out to me and say, oh my God, I loved it, it touched a part of me, or I could relate to the character, or I felt seen, that is very, very fulfilling. So that's definitely the positive side of being a filmmaker. But on the other side, I am an independent filmmaker. Like, I'm not backed by studios or anything. And so for that, it definitely brings in the spicy side of the industry. Yeah, very spicy.
I like that you say the spicy side. One thing I loved when I reached out was firstly, you were nice. Honestly, it's hard. In Zambia, famous people are not always nice. Like, it's just like you. Okay. But I like your work. Do you want to share your story? I'm always reaching out to people like, do you want to share your story so that you can inspire younger people? And that it's just very chaotic. And the other thing I loved about all this was when we were watching the movie, you said, this is just for Zambians.
No, actually, it was for everybody, but for Zambians, I made the movie free. Everybody else had to pay,
yes,
but Zambians, you could watch it for free. Oh, so sorry. Sorry about that.
Yeah. We could watch it for free.
And yeah, I saw, but only you guys.
I saw it in the comments where you said, oh no, yeah, if you're Zambian, yes. And I was like, yeah, that's so nice. It feels so
And then somebody responded and said, why only Zambia? And then I was like, because I'm Zambian. Why
else? I know, right? That makes me think if I ever do anything big, I'm totally going to consider my people and do it for free. For my people?
For my people, everything. You know, I made this film for them to see, but I want to start off by saying that you were really sweet as well. I think anytime that you put something out there and somebody actually takes the time to respond to your work, to respond to your art and say, hey, this is what I felt about it. It's such a lovely thing to do. And it just feels so natural to actually write back to the person and say, thank you so much for the encouragement. Because it means a lot, especially when you're an independent artist. Just hearing all of these small little things, it really gives you the fuel to have that strength to say, you know what, let me just keep pushing somehow. Let me just keep going. So, in as much as you thought I was nice, it was actually very nice of you to share your words of encouragement and support with me because you didn't even know me. You just saw my film. So, for you to say, you know what, let me holler at this girl and say these things, that was wonderful. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you. I'd like to say, not in a bad way, but when I watched the trailer, I got triggered.
I know. I got that a lot. Man, when I shot it, I got triggered. Imagine writing it and shooting it. How triggering was that? But yeah.
Got triggered, and
Yeah.
I think about it in a way that I'm Zambian, I'm a girl, right? This is what they tell us growing
Yeah.
up. I always say this to my family that when I was growing, when I was younger, they would say, you have to learn how to cook because you need to cook for your husband. You have to learn how to clean the house. It was never, you have to do it because it's a life skill. So I just definitely don't like cooking. Like, I hate it. Everybody in my life,
Ma'am, are you me? Are you me right now? That's exactly my story. And trust me, I'm a lot older than you. And I remember I went home for the holidays last year and I asked mom to make me something. I think I must have asked her. I can't remember what I asked her to make me. And then she was like, how are you going to cook it for your husband? And I was just thinking to myself, like, my husband, I'm here asking you with concerns about my own stomach, and you're asking me to consider the stomach of a man I don't even know. Like, let's be serious here. I was so shocked. So this stuff, it never really ends, even from people that you think would know better. Kudos to her. She still made it for me. Let me just put that out there. She still cooked, but
Yes,
yeah.
dear, her child.
Okay.
I get that a lot. My mom would always say that you have to learn how to cook this. You're not going to call me from Ghana to come and cook it for your husband. What do you mean?
I know, I
Still gonna
know.
cook it. I always disclaimer, I always say I don't think my husband really cares about my cooking skills as
It sounds familiar. And honestly, it's not like, I don't know, I would say that when you're from a certain generation, it's not just about the actual cooking. It's like feel like we're being taught that there are certain things we should have pride in. So for us, we come from an era where it wasn't uncommon for women to go to school. You know, women were going to school, they were going to college, they were being taught to have, you know, aspirations, to have a career, and they were taught to seek pride in that. But back then, women weren't allowed to go to school, women weren't allowed to work. The only thing that you could do was be a wife. And so the idea was, well, if you're going to be a wife, be a damn good wife, be the best wife, be the wife that knows how to cook every single thing that her husband will never think to say, maybe we should get takeout. So you get what I'm trying to say? Like, I think we just, it's a generational issue of finding pride in different things. Of course, I'm not saying that you can't take pride in, you know, being the best home chef now, but I feel like we're getting to the point where we're trying to say fulfillment should come from inside as opposed to seeking approval.
I like that you say that we're in a different era and what prioritizing different things, right? When you're younger, you get to think, like for me, as an example, I said I got triggered because I grew up in a household where we were taught that you have to learn how to cook, you have to learn how to do certain things because one day we're gonna marry you off, and we don't want you to embarrass. And I was the youngest, so as a Gen Z, I have questions, and I would always ask my grandpa to say, "Why should I cook?" Like I don't like cooking. So why does that have to do with my worth? Because it goes to a sense of your worth. And actually,
Yeah,
when I was
unfortunately.
in South Africa, we're having lunch and everybody was talking about how their wives cook and everything. And I just said, I hate cooking. And this guy, who's amazing by the way, just said, no. So what are you gonna do if you don't cook for your husband? Then you're not worthy to be married. I'm like, eh? I didn't know.
Oh my God. Wow,
I
a
got
stone
so triggered,
ages.
and we had conversations about it. He did apologize because I said, firstly, I'm not your child. And secondly, would you want your child to have such a narrative about her worth? To say you're worth nothing. You're only worth something as a woman if you can do specific things in a household.
If you're able
Anything
to serve
else?
a man, basically.
Oh yeah, thanks for putting it out there. If you're able to
Yeah,
serve a
no.
man.
Yeah.
If you can't, yeah. So it's very interesting to just watch that. And I watched the full movie. Still got triggered the whole way. I know I get feedback, but I could relate. I was like, oh, wow. And I'm not even married or dating. So it's just like
God, yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's less about actually the physical act of cooking or the physical act of housework. I feel like it's more about just the fact that we as Zambian women, it's kind of been normalized that we should bear the burden for the entire family. You know what I mean? Like you look on Facebook and you see these memes, and it's like a woman in a suit with a briefcase, but then she's also standing at the stove and she's cooking, and then she's got a baby on her back, and then she's probably got something on her head because she's got a side job selling things afterwards. And I'm like, yes, okay, it's great that we're capable, but is there really a reason why we've normalized carrying everything on our back? Because you're showing this meme of a woman in an office suit at a stove with a baby on her back. There's washing at her feet. I mean, if she's doing all that, then where the hell is her husband? Is he a ghost? I don't understand that. And so for me, I was just trying to show that I don't think we should be normalizing things that have caused for so many generations such extreme stress, such extreme fatigue, such extreme, shibikisha, where you're just being taught, well, just smile and pretend it's great. And at the same time, you're not even in a position to say, do you know what? I don't know if it's okay to say if things could be different, because you're telling women that you have to be a million and one things. And then at the same time, we're shaming them for saying, well, is it not possible to at least make it just a million? Maybe not a full million and one. You get what I'm trying to say, right? It's
Yeah, I
just it's
do.
the yeah, it's telling women you have to be absolutely everything under the sun and branding them a failure if they say, well, there's still a whole gender that could at least help with some of these things.
I like that you say that a million and one, because we're expected to be something we're not. For me personally,
And swallow the
and
pain.
this,
You're being told
yes.
that it's okay if you're exhausted. It's okay if your heart is broken. It's okay if your husband has 5,000 kids everywhere. It's okay. Just take it. You're strong. You're Zambian. But you know what? We're also women. We're also human. The same blood that runs through the male gender's vein is the same blood that runs through ours. And if we weren't so entrapped by patriarchy, I feel like it would be easier to come out and say some of these things.
I like, to be honest, this episode is like personal and for me. Because even when you're in the dating scene, I always say this to people I date, you want an independent woman to a certain extent. Like, it's cute to say your woman is independent and they're thriving, flying out, doing at that to a certain extent. Like, you want them independent, but not. like, but you want them to be in this box also. So
Mm-hmm.
mostly when I'm in a relationship, I'm like, oh no, it's so nice when you see me on social media, but when you meet me and actually meet me and I'm still the same person, you don't like it because you're like, our values don't align, or I just don't think that's for me. And I will tell you upfront. And this is what that Bride of Zambia reminded me to just say, it's a lot of double standard.
Precisely. Precisely, 100%, a lot of double standards. But the thing is, because as a culture, we are so trained to seek approval from men that we as women ourselves validate the double standard before men even do. So I don't know if you noticed in the film, but I purposely didn't really show the face of any man. Throughout the film, it was just women having conversations with each other. And the one time a man featured in the film, it was shot from the back. We didn't really see his face. And that's just because I really wanted to highlight the fact that in as much as we want to point our fingers at men and say, oh, you know, patriarchy is because of you, we're also very big proponents of patriarchy, you know? A lot of the most backwards and harmful things we hear about gender, we hear from our parents. And you know what was so interesting is, I don't even mean this in a disrespectful way. I was so surprised when I released Bride of Zambia because I got hundreds and hundreds of messages from women supporting me, supporting the film, saying that they liked the message. But at the same time, it's kind of like everybody was saying, I'm so glad somebody has said this out loud. I'm so glad that somebody has started this conversation. And the real reason why we didn't start the conversation before is because we're still focused on seeking approval from men, not because of our own personalities, but just because of how our culture has trained us. Nobody wants to speak out because, you know, with a man, if you hear that a man is, you know, a powerful rights leader or civil rights leader, they're always so, oh, you know, an outspoken critic of racism or a strong proponent for equality. But if a woman is saying the same thing, she's loudmouth. That's it. Nobody calls a
And she's
woman a
rude.
strong
And
proponent or an outspoken critic. She's just a loudmouth, whether she's saying the truth or not. Exactly.
I know, like, certain things that are bold from men, just straightforward. When it's coming from a woman, it's rude.
Exactly.
I face
And
that
that,
a lot.
yeah. And all of that stems from patriarchy. So we have a system where we as Zambian women, we see what's happening. We see, you know what? This isn't 100% right. Or, you know, things could be better for all of us, not just for one gender of the population, but things could be better for all of us. But it's just that need to be seen as the perfect woman according to cultural standards that keeps everybody back from speaking, even though we know that these cultural standards are biased. So it's kind of a very strange catch-22.
It's very, like, it's very interesting. What inspired you to be a producer?
I'm actually a producer because when I was starting out as an independent, I couldn't get any really big producers to work with me. But I mainly write and direct, but I definitely produced my first two films because I just felt like not I really wanted to get things off my chest, but I heard a lot of what was being said by the women around me. And I saw the stress, I saw the fatigue, I saw the pain, and then I just thought to myself, well, if you aren't going to say it, then I will. And that was that.
It's interesting how short films are. I know you
That's
said short.
finances.
Yeah,
I would have
that's
loved
good.
it to be like an hour long, but that's what we had.
It's very interesting. You could also see the detail and how particular every scene was and how intentional you were about it.
I appreciate that.
Like, could you tell me about like how it was to just have the cast members, everybody there? Like, how were the emotions in that moment?
So let me tell you one thing. This film was a micro budget. There was this Bollywood company called Indie Films World, and my friend introduced me to the CEO of it, and he liked the script, and he said, "It's an interesting story. I think women all around the world can relate to that." And so he gave us a micro grant for it. So we had a little bit of money, like we had a little something. And then actually, I had put some things back on a casting board in the US called Backstage. And then weirdly enough, my aunt was like, "Oh, you know, my friend is interested in acting and she's Zambian too." So I said, "Okay, great." And then we did an audition and she was so good. I was like, "Okay, that's done." And then I met this, why did you meet her? I knew her from before. And I realized not only did they look a lot alike, she was also very good. So even though I had started with public casting, completely by coincidence, I just ended up with two people that I kind of already knew. So that was such a stroke of luck. And you know, I was just speaking with this, literally just before you, I was speaking with this director from Cameroon, whose name is Jean-Pierre Bekelo. I mean, he's having a huge moment now. He's been at Harvard, he's been at Dartmouth. The festival I worked for featured him. His movies have screened all across the world. And he watched the film and he said to me, "Where did you get your cast from?" So, sometimes it shows you don't have to like cast your net so far and wide, because what you might be looking for is right in your backyard. Literally, for me, I went through so many auditions only to cast people that I already knew. This is so crazy. But and the shoot itself was, yeah, it was I think anytime you're doing something like a low or micro budget, it's definitely going to be challenging. But I think at the same time, it also shows why you need to prioritize relationships, because no matter how hard the shoot got, my friends who formed a lot of the crew were just like, "It's okay, we got your back." And there was one day when it was actually a 16-hour day, but for the most part, they all stood around me and I had my back. And for that, I will be eternally grateful. So grateful. And so I say, you can't just want things for people, you also have to be the type of person that shows up for other people and has their back, because somehow that energy always comes back to you. And you might think that you're down and out, and then people will just swoop in and they'll say, "Oh, no, we got you. It's okay. We're going to push through and we're going to see this through." So, yeah, that was another lesson learned from that.
How long have you been in the US?
I actually lived here as a child. So I
Ooh.
lived here until I was about 12, and then I moved back home to Zambia, where I was there for all of high school. I went to a school in Southern Province called Gwengo School.
Interesting.
Have you
Could
heard
you
of
tell
it?
me about... No, I haven't.
Oh. Okay.
Lotisa, thanks, ne? Thanks for
No
putting it
shade.
out
No, no
there.
shade, but you might be better off that way, but it's fine.
Wanted to ask that at 12, I think 12, 13, you came back to Zambia. Could you, as a child, can you tell me about the culture shock? Like, you're from
Yo,
the
it
U.S.
was a huge shock, because imagine like you lived in New York City and then your language was in Monze. You know where Monze is?
Yeah, I
It's a lot
do.
bigger now. It's a lot bigger now. But back in the day, it was small. It was so small. I felt like it was just that one main road. You know, the road that goes to Livingston?
Yeah.
I feel like that was the main road and that was it for the town. So what you see now in Mwanze isn't what it was way back when. It was a lot of culture shock. And unlike my brother, who seemed to just fall into place, it took me a while to really find my way. But when I did, it was good. I had actually moved back home That was probably about 2019 to 2021. And I had such a hard time leaving to come to New York. Like, I didn't want to go. I just wanted to stay at home with my family. I wanted to stay in Lusaka. When I went to say bye to my aunt, I was crying so hard. I'm sure she thought I was dying and just didn't want to tell her. It was so funny. But I've spent a lot of time in Zambia. I would say easily a third of my life.
I love that you talk about, in these two instances, I've heard you talk about the power of community and how you have your people, and something I live by because I have my people all the time. It's like you always have to have your people that you pour into, and they always pour back
Exactly.
to you because life alone is hard
Yep, it is.
and it's less fun.
It's less fun. It's less fun. And you see all these people, they're so moody and grumpy, and you're just like, maybe unless you have some kind of clinical depression, then that's another story. But maybe if you just smiled and made an effort to say, let me put out into the universe what I would want the universe to give to me, and you reached out to people, you would find that people would do the same for you, because no man is an island. I don't think there's anyone that can say, I did everything absolutely on my own. And that's one thing I really love so much about being back home, because we really go through that. It's just like, no shade, but when you're here, you see people say, I'm getting married, then you have to start sending invites to people. Do you want to be my bridesmaid? Do you want to do this? But back home, you just call your girls up, you say, I'm getting married, that's it. People are gonna call you and start saying, okay, so what are we doing for Chilanga Malilo? What are we going to do for the kitchen party? What's the idea? Like, everybody turns up for you. It's just like at a funeral. Sorry to bring up such a dark example, but you just have to say, my loved one has passed. Before you know it, there's 50 people at your gate. They've come with their chitenges, they're coming to sleep, they've brought food, they're coming to help you cook. And I don't think as Zambians we should ever take for granted how strong our sense of community is and how beautiful it is, because it's not really something I've seen elsewhere to that extent in the world.
That's so true. I would say on the funeral, but I've had like a really dark period the past 6 weeks. Like our family has just been going through the most. We've lost really important people in our lives.
I'm
And
sorry to
I
hear that.
always say, yeah, I always say that my family always shows up. It's like all around the country, but if something bad happens, everybody drops it. Everybody
True.
has to drop. It's
True.
it happened at 10, tomorrow at 6. You all know you're traveling, so you better be
True.
up. And
True.
I
You
saw
don't have
that
to
difference.
ask. You don't have to ask.
You know they're gonna show up. You know that they're gonna be there eventually. And they have the first respondents and those that come late. My family is very funny. And when I was in the US, I actually missed my family. And I got to see my brother's wife and my uncle, and I was about to cry, and I'm like, damn, these people are so individuality. Not that it's a
No,
bad
they
thing,
are. And I don't think it's a good thing. I'm just gonna
yeah,
come out and say, I'm gonna say it's not a good thing. Like,
it's always about me. It's always about them. It's like me this, me that.
Or it's always about that's not my problem. But what people don't understand is that honestly, we are all connected. Whichever holy book you open the Bible, you open the Quran, you open the Bhagavad Gita, everything says that we're all connected. There's no such thing as one. And when you introduce the idea of one, me, myself, and I, that's when you run into trouble.
Yeah.
But
And I think
that's why, oh, sorry, go on.
no, please go on.
No, but I was like, that's why for me, it was really easy for me to make the comments I made about some of the aspects of our culture with relation to gender, simply because I know our culture is so much more than that. I know that we're such a loving people. I know that we're such a big, expansive, generous, and giving people. And I acknowledge that so full-heartedly with every bit of my soul, so much to the extent that I don't mind saying, well, there are things that could be different in the way that we relate to both men and women. So that's a big part of me because I really love us, you know, and I've had the great fortune and I've had so much blessings to have been able to have visited, you know, so many countries back home in Africa, but also around the globe. And I still feel that our sense of community is top tier, but I can also see some areas where we're like, I don't really know if this train of thought is still serving us. Maybe it worked for us 300 years ago, but I don't know if it serves us now.
I like that you're saying it's we're not saying it's a bad thing. We're just saying as where we're at right now in 2024, this is not serving us because we have different mindsets, we have different generations, we have different aspirations, and we have these new people who look at life so differently. So trying to make sure that we're boxing everybody in one group makes everybody else, on the other hand, feel like they're not worthy of acceptance because society
And
makes
by the
it.
way, these feelings of low worth also ends up impacting the economy. Let me
True.
give you an example why. Because you're training women to say, oh, you know, you should always be humble to men, or you know, you should always show deference to men. And you have a situation where these women are at home and that's what they're being told. But when they come to work, they're not able to show, to shake that off. Do you understand that? They're at the boardroom and they're still thinking, well, I need to give deference. I can't speak too much, although I'll be called a loud mouth. And so, in that way, they're not really living up to their true potential because they're saying, I need to at least show that I'm letting the man pass first. But at what cost? That's a cost to, you know. Leadership potential of women, that's a cost to human capital. It actually pulls us back. And then the worst part is, in the worst cases, you have a scenario where there's a woman that's speaking out at work, and then the other women are saying, oh my God, look at her. She thinks she's all that speaking out. So she thinks we're stupid for being quiet. So not only is she kind of like a voice alone in the wind, she's actually generating a most animosity amongst, you know, her fellow female workplaces, her fellow female workmates. And it not only enlarges the divide between women, which should not exist, but it still puts men so much far ahead of us. And so for me, I would say if we're not looking at these things for the sense of niceties, we should at least be looking at them for the sense of the economy, or the sense of business, or the sense of being competitive on an international level. Because so much talent is squandered due to women not being able to shake off. And it even hurts me that I'm scared to say this word, but I'm going to say it, but women not being able to shake off the need to always be submissive to men. Because in the end, it adds up, not just in the home, but outside of it. And then we as a nation end up losing.
Ooh, the key word.
Yeah, it's hard because anytime you say submissive, people lose their minds. And it's such a trigger word. But I really hope that we can unpack why is it such a trigger, or why does it cause so much pain to say that, you know, maybe she doesn't always have to be submissive?
You know
You
what
know?
funny thing is? I also have to reread the Bible on this. Because I'm a Christian and I, of course, believe in Christianity and the Bible. And you know where this verse is, but somebody read to saying women should be submissive to their husbands, right? And men should be submissive submissive to the wife the way they're submissive to the church.
Yes.
We only hear the parts
Yes.
of women being submissive to their husbands.
Preach,
We never
preach,
hear the part
preach.
that we you can read any meme, any story. We never hear the part, and this is where we hear the double standard, the part where they say men should be submissive to their wife the way Jesus was submissive to the church. Nope.
Amen. You
Nope.
never hear that.
We
But
never.
then again, that's also because, you know, a lot of the leadership, even in religious circles, is male.
Yes.
And why is that? Because a lot of women are still hesitant to look like the loudmouth person and say, you know, I would like to say something, or I would like to add on to that and say, the Bible also says men should submit to their wives like they submit to the church. So again, it all stems from the fact that the leadership is male, and our culture has just made us feel too small to kind of have our own say, or to kind of add our own very, very well knowledgeable understanding of the Bible to that.
That's like one of my most interesting thing because we hear it most. I hear it when I'm listening to like the Western pastors preach, right? I rarely hear it when it's my people, the Zambians, the African pastors preach. So I'm just like, oh. So it's so different in how we look at it and the type of impact, just the gender inequality has on people. Again, guys, I'll just have to say this is so personal because I face it a lot.
I know.
It shouldn't be funny, but I've had people not like me ever since I was pretty young because I'm very vocal. And I came from a household where you were, my grandfather to be specific, my grandfather would say, have your own money, Aka, because money is power. I live by that now, and I see the dynamics. Like I'm not
Because by
financially
money is what?
power, in the sense that if you find yourself in a situation where you can get away using money, and you don't have that money, and you'd have to ask for that money, that the other person has leverage on you, like you owe that
100%.
person. Yes. So ever since I was young, my grandfather would always tell me those tips to say, oh, he didn't like it. He didn't like me getting anything for free from anybody, especially me. Because we go like, nothing is for free. There's a price to everything, right? So I live by those principles. And you go to a society where you're taught as a woman, as a girl, please keep quiet. You can be successful, but not too successful. You can dream, but not too big that you chase away your potential husband. Isn't that
A
weird?
hundred percent. I mean, you hit the nail on your head, and you said that as a little girl, or ever since you were little, nobody liked you because you spoke out. And let me break that down for you. The men didn't like you because you felt like, I'm just going to assume, a threat to what they have made their belief, what they have been made to believe is their divine right of superiority just because they're male. Like, especially in Zambia, just because you're male, you're already on a pedestal. And so to hear a woman speaking back to you, it's kind of like, well, wait, this goes against my birthright. Like, do you not see what's in my pants? Why are you talking to me like this? Why are you questioning me? Why are you calling me out on something that I've said, which we both know is not right? So on the male side, there's that. And then on the female side, it's probably like, well, who does she think she is? The rest of us are here just being quiet and suffering. Why does she think that she has the right to say something and maybe escape these circumstances? That's the first part. And the second part is, your grandfather sounds low-key like a feminist because the upper half
Was.
has always been financial. This man
He
was a feminist.
was.
He was. And the
That
upper
man
hand
was
has
evil.
always been financial. And this is why you see so much discontent now in terms of the gender balance because women work now. So men no longer have the financial upper hand. So how else are they supposed to dominate women? They dominate them by shame, by saying, you're a woman, you're supposed to do this, you're a woman, you're supposed to be that, you're a woman. And it becomes very, very toxic. Very toxic indeed. This is why gender relations now are much more toxic than it was 60 years ago, because there's no longer that financial leg to stand on. That's the truth of the matter.
I know. Low key, my grandfather was a feminist.
Yeah, it sounds like he was, I can tell, because other grandfathers are just going to tell you, why don't you wear that nice dress and maybe, smile a little bit more at that guy who comes around a bit. It's going to be a mess.
No, mine was go to school, get your money. No to that. I can pay that for you. You don't have to act like you're suffering. And I think that's why his death was so a huge impact, because I didn't
I'm
have
so sorry
that
to hear
relationship
that.
with my father. So you go from a person who's very supportive to people who just don't even understand what's going on. Mostly my family
I
never
would
knows what's
say
going on.
supportive and honest, because a
Yes.
lot of people want to pretend they don't see what's going on, but your grandfather was able to see how finance is being used to manipulate, oppress, and keep women down. And he was, even as a man, he was honest enough to speak on that. So it extends towards much more than support. It was about authenticity, it was about honesty. And I feel like these are characteristics we need to build if we're going to actually thrive as a society.
That's so true. He also got me out of cooking, by the
Oh God, my mom cooks a ton.
Kudos.
Good to him. Good for
I
him
know.
though.
I
I
am
mean,
so
everyone
grateful.
should learn how to cook, but you should be learning how to
It should
cook
be a life
for
skill.
yourself. It's a life
I
skill.
actually, it's a life skill. Actually, in that's my way of coping with grief right now, is cooking. It's like me showing myself love. It's when I'm home, I work from home mostly, so I cook. It's like me stepping away from my laptop, from the world, and going to the kitchen for an hour and making myself a meal to just say, you know what, your life isn't as best right now, but you still need to eat. Like, that's my love language to myself in this grieving period. So it's like, it's okay, but I don't know how I'll feel about it in a different season, though. But yeah.
The thing is, what's beautiful right now is that you're doing it for yourself. I
Yeah.
mean, it's another thing when you're doing it for yourself, or you've met a man and you're so in love, and this
And you
man
have to do this.
takes care of you. This man looks at you and sees the moon, the stars, the sun, and he treats you that way. It just feels natural to want to nurture him. It feels natural to say, I want you to be well. I want you to have nutrients. I want you to have a full belly. But it's a different situation where you married someone who isn't really any of those things, but because of culture, you're now supposed to cater to someone who doesn't even give you half of as much of that back. It's like you're continually having to set yourself on fire to keep someone else warm, all in the names of tradition. When push comes to shove, you will die, and this man will replace you in 2 days.
If he hasn't yet replaced you, even if you're alive by
It's
then.
exactly. That's why I'm like, I don't have a problem with cooking because I see that as an act of love, and I see that as showing appreciation to somebody who loves you and treats you well and fills your soul. And you're saying, okay, my soul is so full for you, so full from you. Let me put food in that belly and make you full too. That's one thing. But being forced to cater to somebody that treats you badly, is running all over town, has so little concern for you, and it's okay because he's a man. All he has to do is leave rent. Sometimes, even though that's only 1,500, I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Yeah,
Because
I
when you
think.
add up all of those hours of unpaid labor, What he does for you can never, ever, ever compare to what you do for him.
I like that you added the unpaid labor.
It is unpaid. If you were to add up, listen, if you were to be charging, then you, like, let me tell you one thing. If you were to be charging all those hours of unpaid labor, he would probably have to pay you 6, 7,000 a month, and you're both working. Let's not pretend you're not both working. This economy, God bless us, this economy is not really a one income household economy. This is definitely a two income household economy. And then you come home and you do your second job, which is looking after the house, the children, the cooking, the cleaning, without so much as a thanks, just because you're a woman. No, it's strange. They're very strange times we're living in.
I so love the unpaid labor. And there's one thing about
It is unpaid labor.
it is though.
Ask him, ask
True.
what he would spend if you had to get somebody else in to do all of that.
We should all just get somebody else to do it. It's very healthy. And in Zambia, a lot of households can afford it because it's not that costly.
I
Yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But I think
We
it's
can.
also deference. I think I know in my film I didn't want to, honestly, because it's not something I'm alienated from. Like in Bride of Zambia, a lot of my work, a lot of my inspiration for that film was just all the women who have been around me. So I didn't want to go too deep in it because I didn't want to trigger too much, but it was about more than just cooking and cleaning. It was also about this shipikisha culture, this culture of saying, well, no matter what it is, just pull through. Why? Are you a donkey with a cart? Like, why would you just pull through for the sake of saying, this is the bond I've made when you don't get that reciprocity? Culturally, we're not able to take accountability for our actions. You keep telling somebody, these women, oh, it's okay if your husband cheats.
You
Oh,
come back home.
it's not going to destroy your home. But then when you look at that huge, huge devastation that HIV and AIDS caused us, can you not see how that was directly related to even married men having multiple partners? But we're still here saying, just look the other cheek. Just turn the other cheek, sorry.
I
I
don't think
mean,
we are ready for conversation, to be honest.
we're not. I know we're not. So that's why I didn't include that in my film. I just tried to keep it to the small things, housework. But the truth of the matter is that turning the other cheek on this gross imbalance between men and women in Zambia has caused a lot of devastation throughout the nation, not just economic, like life. People have died. Millions have died. And I just wish that we would wake up one day and see if we were to make some adjustments to our culture with regards to gender, we would see a lot of improvement in so many areas.
That's so true. There's something I'd like to touch on is feminism. There's so many things said about feminism, especially in Zambia. So many scandals, I might
It's a
say.
dirty word. It's a dirty word.
Why is it a dead word? I read Sheryl Sandberg, if that's her name, how you pronounce her.
That lean in.
Thomas, yeah, Lean In book. And I liked how it's she said this is not a feminist manifesto. I don't know if you know that part. Like, it's my favorite part in the book. But this is a book for da 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 da. I've forgotten the whole speech. And when you read that book, you really start to get and understand feminism in a different perspective. And you move it from why everybody thinks it's dirty. Because I'm a proud feminist. Of course, I'm not doing that. Of course, I want that for myself, not just because I'm a woman, but because I'm human. It should be my right to. So, yeah, could you tell me your thoughts on it?
Listen, the one thing that I say about feminism is I feel like people think it's an opinion or it's a belief, but it's an actual ideology, you understand? Like, much in the same way that we have communism or we have totalitarianism, feminism is something that has to be studied. You know, there's so much feminist literature out there. So I get really not irritated, but I get a little bit afraid when people just think feminism is all about shouting and, you know, burning bras, or because there are a lot of women, especially, who put so much time, effort, thought, and most importantly, research. So much research. So many millions of pages of research into feminism. And having said that, I sometimes feel a bit cautious to label myself as a feminist simply because I honestly don't feel like I have enough reading. You know what I mean? It's like
Yeah.
sometimes I hear my friends discussing feminist literature and I'm still so behind on it. And so I tend to shy away from that word, not because I don't think it has value or not because I think it's destructive, but just because I feel like I've got a ways to go to catch up on my reading to say that with confidence that, you know what, I'm 100% sure I know what this is about. But if you were to ask me about gender equality, then I would say yes, 100%, I believe in gender equality.
So there's one thing I love when it comes to gender equality as the word gender equity. It's like, there's something I learned. And this is not me running away from the feminist conversation, but
It's not, because I kind of ran away from it too, simply because I'm like, I don't know if I'm there yet. But trust me, when I do the reading and I'm comfortable in it, I will proudly declare myself a feminist. To me, it's not a dirty word. It's just something I need to be more informed upon. But
I still
please carry on
declare.
with the gender equality. Gender equity.
I still declare, but I'd also still want to learn more about feminism. Love that too.
I appreciate that stance. It's a
Yeah.
strong one.
Yeah. It's
Okay,
like,
I'll declare it too. I'll just say I need to learn more, but I'll declare it too as well.
yeah, it's like, I still like, I'm open to, also, I realize when it comes to it, there's a lot going on. The moments when something happens and I'm just like, I totally don't agree with what these guys did. Like, you're my people, but this is just not
It's
for
crossing
me.
a line.
Yeah, it's like it's crossing a line I don't want to cross because I wouldn't want to just the other side as well. So yeah, that's what I have been learning the past few months and years. And also, it's okay to mind is one thing I tell myself every day.
I
Yeah.
think it's a smart thing to tell yourself.
It gives you room to forgive yourself for some decisions. Yeah.
We should always be forgiving ourselves. Shame is a very low vibrational emotion. Feeling shame, feeling guilt, it doesn't benefit anyone, especially just because once you start to feel those things, you start to project them on other people, which doesn't help us at all.
That's so true.
There's no need
You're
to have shame. Just forgive yourself and move on.
the way you forgive others and move on should be the same grace you give yourself.
Amen. Amen. You cannot pour from an empty cup.
Amen. You sound like Oprah.
Used to love that show.
I
I was a little
love
girl watching that show. And in retrospect, I'm like, what was I doing? Did I even understand half of the things I was hearing?
I will send you video and link on YouTube that I have commencement speech that you should
Okay.
listen. The one for the empty cup, all the time. She says that all the time.
Oh,
And
okay.
yeah, so I want you to listen to that and you can tell me what you think.
I appreciate that. I can't wait to look at it.
So we're going to jump onto equality and equity. I learned that for you to attend equality, there should be equity, right? In the sense that talking about men and women, women have been oppressed for so many years. So now we have so many initiatives for these women to reach, at least to reach the same level men are at, then we can start having a conversation about equality. But then everybody's always confused where the stance should be at, right? Because when we are admiring these women, we're leaving out the boy child, and the boy child now start being deprived of some of the things they would have gotten. So it's just, it's a shaky, it's a thin line that's a little blur, I would say, for me.
A thin line between equity and equality, or
The stance, in the sense that as much as we are empowering the girl child, what are we doing about the men? Because eventually, so many resources are actually allocated to women and girls than they are allocated to men. So in the next 50 years, we're going to be have very empowered women, but we won't have men who are able to coexist with these women because they also don't have the same empowerment.
I don't know. For me, the way I look at it, I feel like all of these resources that we see are being allocated to women are not being used to put women ahead, but rather have been created for the purpose of, addressing an imbalance. I feel like historically women have always been behind in terms of, education, entrepreneurship, leadership. They've never really had the same opportunities as men. So I feel that all of this women empowerment isn't about putting women all the way ahead of men, but it's about saying, okay, women, you're about 200 years behind. So let's just put a little more focus on you to try and help you catch up to the standards of modern times. Because it's one thing for us to say, our generation to say, oh, I went to school and all that stuff. Trust me, our grandmothers never, ever, ever had any aspirations of doing these kind of things. When they look at us, they see their wildest dreams. I promise you, ask your grandmother. To her, you having a degree is the craziest thing in the world. And it's because, especially for them in their time or even before their time, it wasn't really a possibility. For you saying, oh, I have the choice to say whether, I'm gonna go to school or I'm gonna start working or I'm gonna start my own business or I'm gonna do this. They never had those opportunities, and we have them. To a certain extent, because we only have them in urban settings. Go to the rural settings, and you see that women don't even have half of the things that those of us who grew up in urban settings have. But I feel like when we look historically, our grandmothers are looking at us and saying things are so different now. And that's because of all of this women empowerment stuff. But we shouldn't only limit that into the cities. We also need to think about the rural areas, because over there, women are still 100 years behind. They still need all of these initiatives to catch up to men. And so the help that I would say we need to give men is maybe just also helping them to acclimatize to this very, very new, very modern phenomenon of female leadership. This very new phenomenon of female entrepreneurship and learning how they can help women or how they can give the space to women to assimilate into these spaces that before had only belonged to them.
Ooh, you touched on a lot of stuff that I like. As I remember when I was probably in the 11th grade, we had some and they were telling us about how in a family, the lady said, my mother built the foundation, but I had to build a house. And I expect my kids to build an upstairs house or a two-story house. And I expect my grandkids to just build on that. So it's like we are just building on what the other generation did. Because I know my grandparents, because I was raised by my grandparents didn't have the resources they have. I actually say this to my parents, to say, if I was raised with the two of you, I would just think everything is normal. But because my grandparents built a foundation and we all just keep building or just adding on top and just excelling and making them proud is just something to be grateful for. And just looking back to that, it just gives me.
We should. I mean, one thing I always tell women that we shouldn't take for granted what we have now. Even what we have right now is nowhere near as much as what women 30 years ago had. We have so much to be grateful for, and we have so many women that fought for us that we should do a be our best to honor their sacrifices.
And what's your favorite childhood memory?
Oh, I remember. I would say my favorite childhood memory was sitting with my whole family. We just used to like to watch TV, and we spent a lot of time sitting together and watching TV. So I think it would just be any of those family nights where we all sat together, probably just eating roasted sweet potatoes and watching something stupid on TV. It just felt like such a circle of love. And I'm very eternally grateful to my mother for giving that to me.
Nice childhood memory. So, Tisa, we have a closing tradition where
Okay.
before I ask you the last question, I didn't give you a heads up for some
Okay.
funny reason. But you have an opportunity to ask me a question before I ask you the last question. Yeah, so you can ask me anything.
Okay. What is your realistic hope for women in Zambia?
That's a good
It's very broad too, so you can be as specific as you want.
My hope is, I hope they know that you can achieve your dreams and it doesn't have to be anything or everything people think you should be doing.
Amen.
You have so much options. You
Amen.
just believe in yourself. You just have to get those opportunities. You have to get your house ready in terms of if you want specific opportunities, you have to make sure you, as an individual, as a woman, you're ready to receive the opportunities. And also,
Amen. You also have to decenter men, but I didn't say that part out loud.
Amen. That's a good question. So my last question is, what do you look forward to?
I look forward to more people watching my film, Bride of Zambia, on Indie Films World. If they are Zambian, they can follow me on Instagram for a free code. I also look forward to my next film, which I already shot and I'm editing, and I hope will be out relatively soon. I don't want to say soon, but relatively soon. It's called Cocoon. And I hope that as women, we'll continue to see each other as sources of support and collaborators, and just continue to build each other up and never tear each other down.
Ooh. I have to say, this was a very enlightening conversation.
It was a lot of fun. I
I
had
said
so much fun.
it was
Yeah, I had a good time. The time just flew by. I looked down at my watch, I was like, it has not been over an hour already. You're very good at this. You're very,
Thanks.
very good at this.
Thanks. I really have to say thank you for texting me back on Instagram and being nice
No,
and
of course. You were so
kind.
lovely. It was so easy to just respond.
And I have to say, like, I love Bride of Zambia, and we're going to put the link in the bio so a lot of people can watch it.
I
And
appreciate that.
what I learned was, as a woman, it's okay to start having the uncomfortable conversations. We don't want to be in a box and pretend that a lot of things that are happening are okay. We want to have,
100%.
and this conversation has done that for me, is very uncomfortable. You might get shade, but then it's also okay because a lot of things were true, and just us having a conversation about it might inspire people to have conversations about them in their friendship groups, inner circle, just so that we all know what's going on in our society and just have an awareness of where we're at
I
as
mean,
women.
listen. So sorry, but I mean, the truth of the matter is, no growth comes from staying where you're comfortable. And I can assure you, even when women started going to school and when women started voting, people were very, very upset. But you know what? It is what it is. We just have to push through all of the pushback and just keep saying what we know is true. It's difficult right now because you're doing this podcast and you're probably one of the only people that's coming out to actually say these things. But 100 years from now, when we look back at this, you will see that at least you did your part for women.
What's the best way to close? Again, Tisa, thank you so much.
You're
I can't wait
welcome.
to have you here for your next movie.
I can't wait either. It will be so much fun.
Know. So, guys, that's the end of today's episode. I hope you loved it. And I hope you
I did.
actually
It
watched
was
it.
fun.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved this session. I hope you guys loved it. Please share it with the friends, especially the women. Please get your women friends and listen to this as a community and have a conversation about it. Please subscribe and tell a friend if this episode inspired you. And I'm really just grateful you stayed to the end. So thank you. Bye.
Bye.